Welcome to episode 419. Are you feeling stressed and burnt out? Have you been feeling this way for a while? Stress is something we all feel, and as such, people think it's normal. But what if I told you stress all of the time, 10 times a day, it really isn't normal, and that it's directly related to some pretty serious diseases like heart disease, obesity, and type 2 diabetes, as well as an increased risk of death? If you're stressed and you know that you need to do something about it, then I'm going to go through what stress is really, internally and scientifically, and then talk about a simple three-step plan to deal with it before it's way too late. Oh, and at the very end, I'm also going to give you a little warning about exercise. So if you're someone that likes a bit of exercise and you're also stressed and have stress in your life, then stay until the end because it's important to know this little detail. All right, let's jump into it.
Welcome to the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. You've tuned in because you want to start taking your health seriously so you don't, well, get sick and die. Here we talk all things health, nutrition, and human optimization. Let's jump into it with your host and resident scientist, Maddie Lansdowne.
What's up, my healthy friends? Welcome to another episode of this wonderful show where this year it's my mission to coach 500 people to get control of their sugar cravings and sugar binges so they can stop yo-yo dieting, stop obsessing about food, and finally create a body that they feel confident being in. And if that's weight loss, awesome. If that's just quietening the noise in your head, then that's good too. That's being kinder to yourself. If it's learning to love your body and accept yourself or have a healthier relationship with food, whatever. Scroll down to the show notes, jump into the caption, click the link, and start a conversation with myself or one of my team members to inquire about our paid program so that we might be able to support you on this journey of dissecting everything that is your internal and physical world to create something new for yourself. And something that's a big piece of what we do with people is help them navigate their stress situation. And so what we're going to talk about today in regards to stress is not really very woo-woo. This is where the mind meets the body, or the external meets the internal, or the feelings meet your physicality. There's nothing weird or woo-woo or spiritual about what we're going to talk about. And most of you listening, you can probably really feel what's going on with your body when stress is happening, or you're at a stage of life where stress has been going on so long, you're really physically feeling the feelings of the consequences of long-term stress. And so that's a big warning sign. That's your body trying to get your attention. Every time your body hurts or aches or feels run down or worn out, that is a message from your body to your consciousness to say, hey, we need help. And so the thing we're talking about today is actually got a term that's called GAS. We're not talking about farting or gut health or anything like that. It's called General Adaptation Syndrome, which is the word or the phrase that describes the physiological changes that your body goes through as it responds to stress. And before I dive into the real complexities or details about the stress response, you should first know that it's very normal to have a stress response. Without a stress response, you would be dead, right? So it's important to have a stress respond to the lion that walks into your house or the crazy guy on the street with a gun or a knife, because without that stress response, you wouldn't be fired up and able to act. And there's even been cases where women have been able to lift cars off of their children in times of extreme fear, stress, devastation, all that kind of stuff, because they're able to harness 100% of their capacity in a way that they never have been able to before. It's like superhuman strength. It's like spiritual almost. However, it can all be put down to the adaptation syndrome, the general adaptation syndrome of responding to a stressor and like using your bodily resources, your physical resources accordingly to be able to get the job done, right? That might be protecting, that might be saving, whatever it is. However, it's an important thing to say at the start of this as well, is that our body and our psychology and our nervous system has a very difficult time differentiating real stress from perceived stress, okay? So the mum who's just been in a car accident with her kids that lifted the car off their kids, that's a real stress. That's actually happened in physical reality. But what your nervous system really struggles to differentiate is you imagining your kids crashing in a car versus it actually happening. And so we see this a lot. A lot of people think up their stresses, or you can just make yourself upset or stressed if you think about something too much, right? something that hasn't even happened, something that might even have an extremely low likelihood of ever happening. So this is an important distinction to make, or an important sort of headline to put across all of this, is that your body does not know the difference between perceived imaginary thought stress and real actual stress that's being put upon you by the external world, okay? And learning to consciously navigate that situation and coach yourself through situations to say, hey, that's not real. That's not going on right now. We're totally fabricating imagination, lies, fictitious stories in our head. And it isn't gaslighting yourself or being in denial, but you do need to be able to coach yourself so that you can exit that stress response sooner and faster so that you can do less damage to your body. And we're going to get into the damage that's done to your body physically based on stress. And it's crazy to me that we can do all of this damage, and actually a lot of people go through a lot of their life feeling a certain way, sad, depressed, stressed, angry, resentful, rejected, you know, all of these terms that can be widely put under a stress response of some kind. And a lot of those come from just the way we think about ourselves, right? It's just crazy. Or the way that we think on behalf of other people. And I'm definitely guilty of that. You know, projecting my own narrative that I've made up in my head onto other people and thinking they don't like me, or they think these things about me, or they must be behind closed doors saying these things, you know? And part of that is the complexity of being human, is learning how to navigate this wonderful thing that we have between our ears that is so creative and is that we've been walking around with for a millennia, and we still don't really know how to drive, you know? We don't really know how to operate this enormous system that's in our skull. But at the same time, it can be incredibly burdensome, which is why the world of personal development exists and why I'm having this conversation with you today. Because where the mind meets the body, that's where things get really serious. And that's why the programs we run are focused a lot on the psychology. So even if you come into my world wanting weight loss or wanting gut health, the question you would have been asked most likely, or the thing that you would relate to most likely about what we do, is that many of the people we work with have done 20 to 30 years of dieting, of short-term things where they've just talked about the physical. Eat this, exercise there, do that, stretch this way. And no one's talking about the stories, the narratives, the trauma, all that kind of stuff. And that's why we talk about it in our programs and as the primary mechanism for how we get people weight loss results or gut health results or skin results or, you know, physically better body results, is we learn how to guide people through this conversation they're having with themselves in their head all of the time for many years, right? Anyway, let's get into the stress response. So there's three parts to the stress response: to GAS, to general adaptation syndrome. So there's first and foremost the alarm phase. Secondly, there's the resistance phase. And thirdly, which many of you will know, is the exhaustion phase. So I'm going to dissect each of those in a little bit of detail. This is much more complex in real life and would require an entire textbook, one of which I actually have on the shelf over here. For today's episode, we're going to just sort of dip into a bit of the science enough to make sense of it and then move on to the next stage. Okay, so the alarm phase, that's the emergency. That's the short-term changes. That's the gasp of breath, the panic, the instant increase in your heart rate. And you might have heard of the HPA axis. And if you haven't before, it's the hypothalamic pituitary axis. And this is what is instigated very rapidly in the alarm phase. Something is triggered in your environment or in your head. You could have just remembered you left your kid at school, or you could have just remembered, oh my God, I did this awful thing and I didn't even realize, or you could have had a spontaneous memory of something happening to you, or you could have accidentally just pushed a glass off the counter. And then, bam, your nervous system fires up in a tenth of a second, even faster. And so what happens is that your hypothalamus, which is in your brain, it releases CRF, so corticotropin-releasing factor. That then travels to the pituitary gland, which then releases ACTH, which is adrenocorticotropin hormone. This then travels from the pituitary gland all the way down to the adrenal glands. And when it binds to the adrenal glands, the ACTH, you then release cortisol. So cortisol is the most commonly known or biggest player or best player on ground, let's say, in the stress response. This is the one most people know about, right? And so when cortisol is released, you know, it actually helps decrease pain so you can survive the stress. It helps decrease your immune response so that it can actually be, you know, giving you more resources. It actually, you know, stops your digestion, right? And actually, as a symptom of that, if you're forced out of rest, digest, and repair, so that digestive system is shut off because you need your blood, you need your immune markers, you need your defense molecules, you need everything, all resources you can get on board to fight this stress, this danger. And fundamentally, and this is getting a little bit psychological, fundamentally, every stress that we experience is in some way tied to our fear of death, because we're biological animals and the stress response is fundamentally to protect us or our offspring from dying. Because if we let any stress go on too long or unchecked, eventually we die. And that's what we're going to talk about today as well. So the cortisol has a really useful function in switching the other systems off to get all resources focused on this one devastatingly fearful threat to your survival, whether it's imagined or whether it's real. Okay. And I guess eventually once the HPA axis actually shuts off, or rather it achieves a certain level of cortisol within the blood, that's known as the state of protection from the external stressor, which is the beginning of moving into the next phase, which we'll get to in a second. Now, the other big hormone that we talk about is epinephrine or adrenaline. That gets released as well. So adrenaline, everybody knows about adrenaline. So you can have good stress and bad stress. You know, a lot of people love adrenaline sports. I love jumping out of planes. I think it's amazing, but it's still adrenaline, right? However, it's short-lived, and you know, you come down from it very rapidly, quite literally. That was not a pun, but it turned out to be. So we need adrenaline because it gives us more power. And again, we're harnessing the resources of the body to defend ourselves. So the adrenaline is responsible for increasing the heart rate, increasing your breathing, increasing your blood pressure, increasing your liver output so that it can give more sugar to the muscles to be ready to fight, defend, run, wrestle, lift a car off your kids, whatever it might be, right? And because all of this stuff does shut off your digestion, it can actually lead to stomach cramps, headaches, even vomiting. So many people, when they're stressed or anxious or nervous, they have uncomfortable bowel movements. They might get diarrhea. They might vomit, right? And you might have had this experience too. So that's a normal response because the stress response, this cocktail of hormones that I've just gone through, actually switches off those things immediately. And then your gut says, oh, we've got half-digested food here. We can't really do anything. We can't absorb anything. We can't actually move it to the next stage. Let's get rid of it at the top. So you go and vomit, right? Or for the stuff that has moved through far enough, the body says, oh no, we don't have the resources to work on this, extract it. And if we leave it here too long, we're going to actually ferment it in a way that's going to be dangerous to the body. So we're just going to get rid of it through diarrhea. So you get diarrhea really quickly. The other thing in this step one of the stress response, the alarm phase, is that you get anxiety. Anxiety is triggered. And a lot of people are stuck in this phase of having an alarm response or an anxiety response all of the time. They're hyper-anxious, right? And for a portion of this, I would actually say this is normal. You want anxiety. If there is a threat, if you hear somebody walking around your house in the middle of the night, you want anxiety. It sharpens your focus. It makes you think through the possibilities of what might happen so that you can make a decision accordingly to keep everybody safe, to keep yourself safe, right? However, again, a lot of these anxieties are imagined by most people. Right? Or they're from a trauma that happened a long time ago that is no longer happening. And so you need some support and help to separate yourself from the past, right? And the perceived idea that the past is about to happen again all of the time. Because anxiety is about the future, depression is about the past. And so the fear about the past trauma is that the trauma is going to happen again, or maybe you are consciously reliving that or feeling like you're about to relive that. So it's about the fear of the future. So you want a little bit of anxiety when things are serious, right? And the same with jumping out of planes. There should be a normal part of your brain that is anxious thinking, oh, this is a pretty ridiculous thing to do. I'm going to plummet towards the earth at 200 kilometers an hour. It's reasonable to have some anxiety there, right? However, the prolonged anxiety is the problem. We're stuck in this alarm phase, which is constantly pumping out stuff from the HPA axis in order to be able to release cortisol, release the adrenaline. And therefore, a lot of people with anxiety issues have ongoing gut issues, because I've just discussed why we switch off the gut system, right? Interestingly, in this initial alarm phase, there's two different responses in regards to the personality type. So we've got type A personality, who's the extroverted, loud, you know, kind of person. I would probably identify as a type A person. I think a lot of people would probably say I was type A. Now, the type A person is actually more at risk. How wild. The type A person gets angry and responds to stresses in an aggressive manner, right? And that is definitely me, right? I am someone that fires up. And I think, you know, sometimes that's why people like this podcast and some of the stuff that I'm a bit controversial about, because when it comes to, you know, things that annoy me or frustrate me or fire me up about the health system, I get angry and aggressive. And it means that I write letters and, you know, send people to court and challenge people. And a lot of people, you know, appreciate that about me, which is great. However, for my own health, it's not a good thing, because type A stresses, we're adding to our own stress by getting angry. So we're literally putting fuel on the fire of the cortisol and adrenaline that we're burning because we're getting angry. And we're not handling it with maturity, which we should be. Obviously, this is a generic comment because a lot of personal development research doesn't factor in the fact that you may have changed. You might still be a type A personality, but you might have done a lot of work on yourself. And I would say I'm in that category. You know, I'm not perfect. I get angry. I lose control. And I'm not someone that likes losing control. It happens very seldom these days, but when I was much younger, it happened a lot more. And that might be the case for you. Or maybe you're still someone that gets super angry all of the time. So maybe it's time to do some work on yourself. And if it's in the context of food, eating, sugar, if you use that to cope, then maybe you should inquire about our programs. Anyway, the people that are more likely to calmly and manage stresses in a more helpful way and move quickly into the adaptation phase of this stress response are the type B personalities. So the people who are a little more introverted, a little more quiet, that are able to say, oh, like, all right, time to get this sorted. It doesn't mean you don't have a stress response or an alarm phase. It just means that you are more likely to deal with it in a more productive manner, because your anger and aggression, like type A personalities, does not add fuel to the fire. It doesn't come into play as much here. All right. So that's phase one, is alarm phase. Next phase, we're going to move for general adaptation syndrome, aka stressing yourself out, or being stressed out by real situations. Step number two, or, you know, phase number two of the three phase journey that you go on, and we all go on, is the resistance phase. So this is actually the opportunity to turn it around. This is what's known as the coping stage. However, really big, you know, cliff note here, is that you can choose to cope productively or unproductively, okay? So what happens here is there's ongoing hormone release. So your cortisol and adrenaline continues. The adrenaline drops a little bit and the cortisol sort of keeps coming out, and it's sort of over large, you know, longer phases of time. So we're talking about, you know, half an hour, 60 minutes, hours to days, you know, and that's starting to get concerning, because your blood sugar levels become irregular. Because remember, we're increasing the amount that the liver is working to be able to make blood sugar available at a higher rate for your muscles to be able to move into physical action. But if one, the stress is in your head, or two, the stress is at your desk, or you're not actually moving your body, then you're not actually using that blood sugar. And so the belly fat that people get on their belly, believe it or not, but men often build up this solid beer gut, what's called a beer gut, and it's really hard. And women often have this pouch on the front, and that can be contributed to by childbirth as well, but this little pouch of fat that they can't seem to get rid of, this is often the result of what I call cortisol repacking. I'm literally making that term up. The idea is that the cortisol that has released all of the blood sugar that comes out of your liver and wherever it's stored, if it does not get used, it has to be packed up and stored somewhere. And what studies show is that it's often repacked onto your belly. And so it's almost like the sugar's been packed twice, and it then makes it even more difficult to actually lose, right? So this is another reason for being able to manage your stress levels and not living in that stress response, because you're just packing, overpacking, overpacking your sugar and your fat over and over and over again onto your belly, right? So you've pulled it out of storage only to put it into storage somewhere else. Okay, so this is why physical movement is actually really important when you're stressed, because you want to burn the blood sugar that has been released, or the body fat that has been released as additional resources to fight, defend, protect, lift, you know, whatever it might be. But so many of our stresses these days happen in our heads when we're not physically threatened in real life. And so we have this issue of all of this energy that's in our system, physical, like real energy, not woo-woo energy, like actual unlocked sugar stores, and we need to shake it off. That's why people say shake it off. So you need to physically move your body. You might go for a run, you might go for a walk, you might quickly do 10 push-ups or 10 star jumps to burn that energy that has just been released by this ongoing, hormone release that triggers the increased release or what becomes an irregular release of blood sugar, which then, as you might suspect, can lead to issues with your insulin release, possible insulin resistance, possible issues with your pancreas and the beta cells, and later down the track, which we'll talk about in a second, possible diabetes, right? Also, muscle tension is a part of this. So your stress hormones get your muscles ready to protect and defend and fight, right? And in order to do that, you need to tense. Okay. And so these muscles, if they stay contracted for a long period of time, this is where injuries happen. Silly injuries, because you're stressed and then you go to pick up a pillow off the ground and you do your back, right? Or you wake up tomorrow with a really sore neck. All of your muscles are tensed, using resources, and they're not allowing free flowing movement. And obviously, this is doubled or tripled the risk if you don't actually move your body or do any stretching or actually, you know, strengthen your muscles and tendons by going to the gym. So the risk of this is worse if you're not actually moving your body in a fitness/exercise kind of way, right? So this is the resistance phase. But the important thing I want to say here about the resistance phase, remember before I said this is the coping stage and you can choose productive or unproductive ways to cope. The most productive way to cope is to actually do the thing that you're stressed about, right? I think it was Jeff Bezos, the founder of Amazon. Now, sure, irrelevant of what you think of him and his business and his monopolization of the globe. Put that aside for a second. But he said a quote that I saw not too long ago where he said, stress is worrying about something that you do have control of, right? And so whether that's true or not, let's just adopt that idea for this conversation. So the most productive way to deal with stress is to do something about the thing that you're stressed about. Maybe you can't. Maybe you're like, Maddie, that's so impractical. I can't. You know, I'm stressed about 3,000 things. Okay, so you obviously need to do some personal development to learn how to sort through your mind and navigate your feelings. Amazing. Come and join our program. But as fast as you can, you want to plan to do something about the thing that you're stressed about. You know, if it's a conversation you need to have with somebody, if it's something you need to go and do, if it's a payment that needs to be made, if it's a financial conversation, conversations are highly stressful and actually the number one reason for divorce in the first 5 years or 10 years are financial issues. So start talking about your finances. It's going to be difficult and uncomfortable, but start it, make it normal. Unproductive ways are obviously the work that we do with people. We help them deal with their emotional binge and overeating. You know, they're desperate to lose weight or they're desperate to be in a body or a mind that they're actually happy with or feeling peaceful with or to have a healthy relationship with food. And often the reason they don't is because they use food or alcohol or soda or soft drink or whatever it is. They use that as their unproductive coping strategy. And I love this quote, if emotional eating helped, it would have worked last time. I love that quote because what it highlights is the idea between the doing of the stress or the coping with the stress rather than fixing the stress. What I mean by that is that if you actually do the stress, it's confronting, it's stressful, but on the other side of it is relief and you exhale and your system calms down and you get back to homeostasis. If you emotionally eat or drink or cope with food, then you don't actually solve the problem that you're stressed about. You've just added stress to the pile by then adding inflammation to your body by putting in unhelpful foods. You've then added mental stress to the problem because you're calling yourself fat and shit and weak and pathetic and I'm back here again and I'm not worth anything and no wonder I'm unattractive or no wonder I haven't had sex in a long time or no wonder nobody loves me, right? And so you're adding loads of that on and you're still not actually dealing with the stress, right? And I'm not saying that the stress isn't hard or confronting or overwhelming and you might need to break it down to bite-sized pieces to work through. But there's productive ways to enter the resistance phase of the stress response, and there's unproductive ways. And the irony is the unproductive ways make 10 times more work in regards to dealing with the stress or creating other stresses for yourself, both physical and psychological. So it's very important that you sort of identify, where do I stress eat? Where do I stress drink? What do I do instead of actually dealing with the stress? It might be alcohol, it might be drugs, it might be smoking weed, you know, it might be insert excuse, right? Or maybe not excuse, but reason that you've justified for a very long time that needs to change. Loving what you're hearing? Make sure you're subscribed here on your favorite podcast app. Or there's even more waiting for you over on YouTube. On our channel, you'll get to see our fascinating guests demonstrate their techniques in real time. You'll see my animated explanation of complex health concepts made simple, plus all of those you had to be there moments that we mentioned in the show. The Coaching with Maddie episodes will be there too. We're also creating exclusive YouTube shorts, quick, powerful health tips you won't find anywhere else. And let's face it, if we're going to be doom scrolling, which we all do from time to time, you might as well make it worthwhile. Just search How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast on YouTube and hit subscribe to unlock the visual side of becoming a healthy friend of the show. Because sometimes you need to see it to believe it. And also, to achieve it. The direct link is in the show notes below. Come and join our YouTube community. So phase three of this journey is the exhaustion phase. Okay, so this is, you know, we've gone alarm phase, very necessary phase, resistance phase, which is coping. This is a really necessary phase. Obviously, we want to be able to cope with what's in front of us, but can be done in very, very poor ways. And many people do it in poor ways, which is why we run the programs we run. And then the final phase is exhaustion phase. This is because you've let the stress response run for too long, or life has been stressful for too long, that basically your parasympathetic nervous system is forced into operation, right? Which is that you're forcing yourself back into rest, digest, and repair. And the way the body does this is, in some cases, it literally runs out of resources. You've got low energy, you feel burnt out, you feel like you've got no drive or motivation or desire to do anything because you've physically, emotionally, and psychologically used up all of your resources. And that manifests for many people in depression, right? And so your body is always doing what is best for you, even if you feel like it's working against you. Remember, I'm a biologist and I stand by the idea that biology does not make mistakes. And if your body is forcing you to deal with stuff, then that shows up often as a disease or an illness because you are not listening to the messages of your body. Sure, there's a very small percentage of people that have very unlucky life situations pop up, or they're dealt a really shitty genetic lottery. But again, I also think that that's biology routing its way around a problem. Now, whether that problem was yours to begin with or not, or somebody forced it upon you, or, you know, that's how the cookie crumbled, you know, that's a conversation for another day. But the point is, for most of us, the exhaustion phase, the depression, the low energy, the burnout, the sleep disturbances that happen are your body saying, hey, you need to relax. You need to focus on repair because you keep putting us in this state and it does damage. It does damage to organs due to the long-term exposure to hormones. It does damage to your back and your neck from all of that long-term muscle tension. You know, you get slip discs, you do silly injuries all of the time. You're always a bit sore, okay? You also have heart and circulatory issues, like we've increased the risk of heart disease, strokes. And it's very common that a lot of people know that, you know, the stressed, overweight man is at risk of a heart attack. And if you hear somebody's having chest pain, which has, you know, happened to some people in my family just recently, they're the typical guys that work super hard, that are in that provider, leader, family leader role, that are doing everything that they should do and feeling that sense of duty, but they're in hospital with chest pain, right? And, you know, that's psychological mismanagement of stress. That's an emotional mismanagement of themselves, which causes stress. And in many cases, and in this particular case in my family, it's the consequence of not physically looking after that person's self as well, right? And I wouldn't lean in any particular direction for these three things I've just said. I think that three of them, physical, emotional, psychological, I think those three are equally proportioned in regards to the attention care that they need. The physical, you need to put good food in. You need to stop putting cheap, shitty, refined carbohydrates and sugar with full of vegetable oil bought from cafes and fast food outlets and the canteen or anything like that, right? You need to look after the physical. You need to look after the emotional. You have feelings, and they often come out for many people in rages, in huge bursts because they don't know how to maturely navigate those conversations, right? Need help with that? Talk to me. You know, I am not perfect. I still have those moments, you know, maybe once a year at this point where stuff comes out like that. But the point is that you've got to be able to, for the most part, you know, you're excused for slipping up here and there. You're a human. But for the most part, you need to be able to communicate about your feelings. And then your psychological health is the way you think about yourself and the world, right? Which can also induce stress. So we need to get on top of that because otherwise you are at risk, men and women, of the heart disease, stroke, death. The other thing is, I mentioned this before, but the long-term ongoing requirement for your body to pump out resources to use your body, so the blood sugar, if you're constantly releasing blood sugar at an elevated rate, guess what? That drives your desire for refined sugar and carbohydrates, you know, and pastries and flour and that kind of stuff. And you end up overeating all of the wrong food, protein deficient, and then you head rapidly towards type 2 diabetes, right? Not to be mistaken for type 1 diabetes, which is very different. So the most common thing is type 2 diabetes, and most people that are overweight and or obese are at risk of that already, right? And you don't need to be overweight to be at risk of type 2 diabetes, especially if you've got a lot of stress going on in your life. But most people, the early warning signs of insulin dysregulation, insulin stores the sugar in your cells. The first sign of insulin dysregulation and a precursor to a warning of pre-diabetes or diabetes is being overweight. And most people that are overweight have some degree, if only subtle, of blood sugar and or insulin dysregulation already, contributed to by unmanaged and ongoing stress. Now, the other thing is, remember earlier I said that your immune system is lowered, right? And what your body's doing there is allowing as many resources as possible to fight whatever's in front of you. Now, if you're doing this for a long time, obviously with a suppressed immune system, you're at risk of infectious diseases, flu, viruses, you know, the herpes virus, maybe even COVID. You know, whatever it might be, bacterial infections, you know, that happens to me actually when I go through periods of stress, when I'm, you know, worn out and I haven't allowed myself some recovery time or to actually piece myself back together psychologically after a particularly challenging event. You know, and often this coincides with not being able to attend the gym as much in recent times, but I usually get problems with my eyes. I usually get styes or blepharitis on my eyelids. And this is simply a sign of my body being stressed for too long. So that is something that pops up for me. So, you know, I'm over here doing the best I can as well, right? And so the good thing is that when these things pop up, I know exactly what to do. And I'm trying to share with you on this episode all of the things that we're at risk for and what to do. So the other thing is with suppressed immune system and high sugar diets and lots of cortisol and adrenaline, you're naturally at risk for an increased likelihood of all types of cancer, right? So we want to be really smart about how we navigate this because I'm guessing if you're still listening, you are someone that experiences and feels stress regularly, right? Regularly. And after talking about everything in this third phase of being the exhaustion phase, I just want to bring attention to the idea, which I might have mentioned earlier about burnout, is that, you know, if you go through this cycle too many times, you know, you can get what's called chronic fatigue syndrome or, you know, HPA axis burnout. And look, there's a little bit of debate around how real that is and where the problem actually is in the system mechanistically. But the point is that burnout happens, irrelevant of what's going on in your body. We've all felt that before. And we want to prevent it because it can wipe people out for quite literally months and increase the likelihood of glandular fever and different types of really long-term challenges, CMV, EBV reactivation, or, you know, so there's a lot of stuff going on there. But fun fact, just while we're here, is that it was once referred to as chronic fatigue syndrome. However, what they're actually asking us to call chronic fatigue syndrome now is known as myalgic encephalomyelitis. There you go. That's a bit of fun for you. Bit of a tongue twister. Now, the other thing about navigating stress, so we've been through these three phases, right? We've been through the alarm phase, step one, resistance phase, step two, exhaustion phase, step three. Now, somebody will have a better or worse experience of stress as a whole, depending on where they land on Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? So the very bottom, if you're at the bottom of looking for food, water, and sleep, right? your ability to respond to stress is going to be less than the person who's a little bit higher. So the next level's safety, right? The next level's belonging. The next level's esteem. And the final level is self-actualization, right? So the higher up that hierarchy of needs you are, the less impacted by stress you are. However, I also would not use this as an excuse to say I don't have to work on my stress, because I'm sure there's some pretty profound people that have done lots of work on themselves or had great guidance from parents or were just born with a particular personality that were able to calm themselves and be good at meditation, all that kind of stuff. So don't use that as an excuse to say, well, I'm suffering because I'm in this demographic of society. Say, well, I have limited resources, but these are the cards I've been dealt. So what can I do from here? And that's what I want to talk to you about now. How to manage stress, right? It's quite a simple system, and most solutions that you will find to complex psychological or biological problems are quite simple. It's just about repeating them over and over and over again until they have the impact that you want them to have, right? So step one is to identify if your bucket is overflowing. And the reality is, and you might not like this, something has to go. In this world of social media where we all feel like we're missing out and we have to be everywhere all of the time and our kids have to be enrolled in 400 different activities and we're going to take them, you know, to it 7 days a week and then drive here, drive here, drive here, drive here. Some things have to go, right? Your health is not a good enough cost for your kids. I do not believe that, because all you're teaching your kids is that when they have kids, they should sacrifice themselves to the point of physical, emotional, and psychological destruction. And I say that as a soon-to-be parent, so maybe I'll find out that that's not going to be the case for me. But the reality is we are leaders of our family, right? Not slaves. And so you need to be able to say, hey, it's okay for mom, it's okay for dad to actually rest and to not be so overcommitted that everybody gets burnt out, tired, and knackered and sick all of the time, right? So some things have to be cut off the list. Step two, and this is, might be difficult for some people, but if change wasn't a little bit difficult, then nobody would have any problems to begin with. So step two is that you want to communicate with those people around you. You want to get them on board with your needs. You want to call friends, let them know what's going on for you or how they can support you. You want to sit down with an intentional conversation with your husband or wife or partner or girlfriend. You know, the reality is that studies show that people that tend to cope better with stress are often found to have strong social support or strong family circles around them. Now, it's really important that you coach yourself or you possess a level of self-awareness that you're able to identify, am I venting and whinging and complaining, or am I communicating to people how they can help support and change things? I'm not saying that venting isn't important. I am such a venter. I'm a talker. I've got a podcast. You know, I rant and rave about all sorts of things, but there's the ranting and raving and venting phase, and then there's the actually doing something about the problem phase. So you need to be self-aware to say, hey, I need to vent about this. And then you need to back that up with a, this is what I'm going to do about it. Because if you don't, and then you repeat the cycle, guess what? The same stress is coming back for you tomorrow. It's never going to change, right? So it's important to sit down with the people around you. They can listen to your vent if that's what you need. But more importantly, they can be a part of your solution and most likely to be able to do less things and actually get stuff off your to-do list. You actually need to have the people around you on board with that. Now, step three is to incorporate practices that reduce the activation of your nervous system, right? Breathwork, journaling, yoga, meditation, hypnosis, float tanks, a day without plans, a bushwalk that's not a competitive, high-paced, intense event, things like that. And there's a little warning here too, is that I'd like to encourage you to not do stress-inducing things as a de-stressor. And people, this is the thing I wanted to say about exercise, right? It's coming up. But if you're trying to reduce the activation of your nervous system, you don't want to jump out of a plane. You don't want to do the hardest hike you've ever done in your life, right? You don't want to be in environments that are stressing you out even more. Yes, there's good stress and yes, there's bad stress, but again, it's still hormones in your system that are continuing, right? It's like saying the water that came from one pond and the water that came from another pond. At the end of the day, whatever comes out of your tap is just water, right? So it's the same here. So we do not want to do stress-inducing things as a de-stressor. You want to calm down. But be aware, a lot of people don't like being calm. Some people are so addicted to their activated nervous system that they don't feel comfortable being less stressed, okay? And this is something you're going to have to watch and monitor and coach yourself into, which is why I often tell people to start journaling with one sentence, to start breath work for just 2 minutes, to try a meditation for just 1 minute. We need to start small because we need to exercise the muscle of actually being relaxed in a way that doesn't feel scary and uncomfortable, because it might feel terrifying. You might have had an activated nervous system since you were 7 when that dreadful, horrible experience that you had that has shaped the rest of your life occurred. And you always thought, I have to be activated and stressed in order to protect myself, right? So there's, you know, can be some deep psychological stuff down there as to why we're addicted to this stressed life. Or you might have a complex about being a failed parent and saying, I've got to give my kids every opportunity, and if I stop, then I'm a terrible mother. You know, we've got to do some work on that belief system as well. So it's very important that we are able to do things that edge us slowly into this space of feeling less stress, feeling less activation, in a way that you can start normalizing it for your body, right? Because if it's not normal, then you're in a situation where you'll run away from that and you'll just go back to the stress, because it's, you know, better the devil I know than the one I don't. Now, the final little tidbit here is the warning about exercise. Exercise is profound in conditioning our body for stress, right? So it's very important to be someone that exercises, and I would preferentially lean in the direction of lifting heavy weights. I'm not against cardio, but I think weightlifting, you know, especially compound movements, deadlifts, squats, you know, chest press, you know, above shoulder exercises with weight, dumbbells, that kind of stuff. Very, very good for conditioning your body to be able to deal with stress. However, again, when you're looking for something to reduce the activation of your nervous system, I don't think going for a hardcore run or going to the gym should be a part of that. Like I said before, breath work, journaling, yoga, meditation, hypnosis, float tanks, no plans, all that kind of stuff is really, really good. It reduces the activation of your nervous system. But the thing with working out is that you want to do it when you're not stressed, on a very regular basis, because your capacity to deal with stress and go through the 3 phases, or at least the 2 phases of the general adaptation syndrome, is going to be much better. And the good thing is, the more exercised and healthy you are, and this includes diet, the more likely you are to only go through phase 1, the alarm phase, and phase 2, the resistance phase, and then move into productive coping strategies. And you actually will bypass phase 3 altogether, the burnout exhaustion phase, right? That's what we want, because we're not going to not feel stress. Stress is always going to be there, but we actually want to be able to get to the resistance phase, productively cope by dealing with the stress and then coming down from it, right? And coming down from it should also be just like the regular workouts to condition your system physically, the regular breathwork, journaling, yoga, meditation, hypnosis, float tanks, all that stuff, that should also be there. And a lot of that stuff you can do for free. You can look for it on YouTube. But sometimes I really believe that investing in your health and wellness in a way that you feel it means that you're prioritizing yourself. You care about yourself. You're investing in something that feels like it matters, because it's got a financial tag attached to it that you think, oh, I probably should get something out of this, right? So if you can do free, do free. If you can do invest in stuff that really feels good for you, then do that, okay? And if anything I've said in this conversation today and relates to you, or that your coping strategy is food or drink of any kind, and you think, I'd really love to explore the work that Maddie does with people in regards to their health and wellness, then scroll down to the show notes or in the caption below, click the link, join a conversation with us, or follow me on social media, and we'll be able to get you, you know, along that journey in whichever way feels right for you. And now, in the spirit of stressing less, I'm going to wrap up this podcast episode and shoot out to the couch and just chill out for a little bit before I move on to the next phase of my day. So if you've enjoyed this episode, please share it with some people, put it out to some people, give us some ratings and reviews. Jumping into Apple Podcast reviews, super powerful way to contribute to this podcast. And if you do so, very appreciative. It helps in ways that you can't even imagine. And the same on Spotify. You can give us 5 stars and you can comment on every single episode. So scroll down, give it a comment, and let me know what you thought. Did this help? Is it interesting? You know, is it the worst thing you've ever heard? Whatever you think, please let me know. And between now and then, I hope you have a good one. I'll see you soon. Bye.
Hey,
Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you enjoyed this episode or learnt anything at all, the gift of your 5-star rating would be incredibly helpful. And what's even more powerful is if you write a review. You can do it below each episode on Spotify, every time an episode comes out, and inside Apple Podcast. Simply find the main page of this show with all the episodes on it, scroll to the bottom, hit write a review, share your amazing feedback, and then hit send. It helps this show grow tremendously and allows me to successfully invite bigger and more famous guests each time we do the show. Thank you, thank you, thank you for helping us climb the charts, climb the algorithm, and help more people. Oh, and by the way, I have a short disclaimer as well. I just wanted to quickly remind you that the information provided on this podcast is for general informational purposes only. While we strive to bring you accurate and up-to-date content, it's important to note that a lot of this is mixed with opinions, stories, and ideas not supported by mainstream science or medicine. Any advice or suggestions should not be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always consult a healthcare provider before making any decisions about the health and wellness of you and your family. Remember too that what works for one person may not work for another. And just as we promote on the show, each person is responsible for their own health decisions. Thank you for tuning into the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. And now, the next episode. Here it is.